This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. My name is Tina Camellia.
I'm T. Shao Yi.
And I'm Sharmila Ganesan. And here's our lineup for this hour.
The Guardian gets a little overexcited about monkeys in Kuala Lumpur. So we'll be asking experts whether gangs of macaques are really terrorizing us.
And following us, we ask, why are the lines outside the women's bathrooms always so long? We discuss the reasons and what can be done.
And on that note, we have a poll on Twitter. What do you hate most about public toilets in Malaysia? Is it because they're always dirty, wet or broken? Is it because there's no toilet paper? Is it because the queues are always long? Or do you think they're getting better? So chime in on Twitter at BFM Radio, or you can also WhatsApp us your other thoughts about toilets and public toilets, 018-789-8899.
To get us into the mood for our first story, here's Monkey Gone to Heaven by the Pixies.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Pixies with Monkey Gone to Heaven. Thanks for sticking around for the Daily Digest. We are talking about the monkeys. who are probably not going to go to heaven.
I think all animals should go to heaven.
Yeah.
But yes, so specifically the long-tailed macaque population that, you know, many of you are familiar with seeing, you know, coming closer and closer to our residential areas. Mm. You know, generally, actually, they live on the periphery of the Klang Valley. But, you know, this is coming from an article in The Guardian about urban development in KL and its impact on this monkey population. So first of all, it's very hard to miss the article on the website, because the headline screams, "Mugged by Macaques, the Urban Monkey Gangs of Kuala Lumpur."
So drama.
A Netflix drama continues. But anyway, the article describes the expansion of KL beyond the city centre and into the surrounding forest areas. So it's a result of all this urban development, and we're seeing it with our own eyes, aren't we? So we're also seeing more long-tailed macaques coming into closer contact with residents of towns and suburbs in the Klang Valley.
Mm, and Ampang is actually one of the areas the writer highlights, which has become rapidly urbanized in the last 30 years. He says that the other areas where the macaques? I'm going with
either,
macaques.
Either.
I'm probably going to say it differently each time. But anyway, he says that the other areas where the macaques come into contact with people are places like the University Kebangsaan Malaysia in Bangi and Batu Caves in Gombak, which I'm sure many of us are very familiar with.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. So earlier I spoke to Benjamin Ong from Urban Biodiversity Initiative on the pace of urban development in Klang Valley, and I asked him about the impact of urbanization on our ecology.
From what I can see, the single biggest cause of land clearance in the Klang Valley is probably for residential purposes, the building of homes and to a lesser extent opening up of land for commercial purposes. It's probably not a popular idea, but local authorities, politicians, the people in power must be more discerning and judicious when it comes to awarding development contracts. Many areas in the city can be rehabilitated, revitalized, rejuvenated without necessarily opening up new land. And I think a large part of it is learning how to make the most of the space that we have. And when we talk about conservation of habitat, there are no two ways around it. When we talk about having to reduce deforestation, that's exactly what it says. Almost all the forest remnants in KL are hills when you think about it. We've got Bukit Kiara, Bukit Tabur, Gasing, Saga, Jeraka, and all this. And in many ways, these are the last refuge for many animals. It's not surprising that these are hills because they pose physical constraints to development. But the reality is that we are steadily encroaching on these last remnant habitats. So the more we encroach in it, the more we can expect reverse encroachment, that is, animals moving into our space. And with that, we can also expect increased conflict. with animals, not just macaques. Mm.
So first, 101 on long-tailed macaques. Mm-hmm. They are native to the Southeast Asian region, although there are actually a few subspecies of them, but they are all around the Southeast mm-hmm. Asian region. Greyish or brown, reddish brown, but actually the babies are a lot darker. So they're about dark,
yes, I've
blackish.
Seen, yeah.
And they are under 1.5 feet tall. Maybe some subspecies are actually almost 2 feet tall. Long tails, that's why they're called long-tailed macaques. They live in primary and secondary forests, mangroves, plantations, and the outskirts of towns and villages, although some of you might say that they live in your backyards.
I think for some people that is the case.
Yes.
Actually, we live in their backyard.
Indeed. Varied diets of fruits, leaves, small mammals, and birds, shellfish, and crabs, as well as human leftovers such as fast food packages, whatever that they can scavenge, right? Yeah. And they're commonly known as kera in the Malay language. And there's a difference between kera and beruk, because beruk are also, so they are a subspecies of macaques as well, but they're the pigtailed macaques. So they're slightly bigger, stockier.
Right.
Those are beruks, and the long-tailed macaques specifically are the keras. Mm. And you have the lutong, which are the silver, well, which are the langurs. Actually, you've got several species as well.
Do they look similar?
Very different. So remember the coat color of the macaques, mm-hmm. they're orange in the adults and black for the babies. The langurs, at least the silver leaf langurs, they're the exact opposite. So they are grayish as adults, but orange babies.
I think they're very famous in Instagram.
Bukit
Melawati. Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, we have on the line Professor Dr. Ahmad Ismail, president of the Malaysian Nature Society, to tell us more about the adaptive behaviors of these macaques. And Professor Ahmad was also quoted in the same Guardian article that we're talking about today. Prof. Ahmad, can you explain why there is increasingly more contact between us and these long-tailed macaques?
What we can see is this long-tailed macaque is very easy to adapt to human habitat. So this is the thing that we create a new conflict between macaque and human. Because usually other animals, they will run away to the forest, right, to go inside. But this macaque who already adapt to the environment with human beings, and they will stay there. They don't go far.
The Guardian article described things like mugging and gang-like behaviours by the macaques. Are city residents really in danger of being attacked by these monkeys?
As I said earlier, this animal is easy to adapt to human being, right? So if we feed them, they will get familiar to this behaviour, and then they know what time you feed them, what you give them, right? How you give them, and they learn from that. If you say, for example, in the recreational park, and people go there, when they see a friendly macaque, they will start to offer food. You know? And then after a long time, this macaque will wait. When people come, they will ask for food. And when you give food, they learn. Where do you get the food? For example, we take it peanuts, whatever, fruits from the handbag. And they learn when you carry handbags, that time they are waiting for that. When you open the handbags, they will start. If they are not competing with others, maybe they wait. If few animals there and they are competing to get food, so this is where you can see some look like macaque attack the people, but actually they are looking for the food. So the best behavior is we don't feed the animal. So we need to educate the public when they go to the forest, when they go to the recreation center, or they stay close to the area where we can see the long-tailed macaques, not to feed them, not to expose their rubbish, not to throw their food everywhere. The management of their waste is very important.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But apart from that, what's the best way for the authorities to deal with the macaques who are already in contact with us?
We have to study further. There are many, many ways that people have been done, including killing them. But the most popular one is we trap them, we transfer to other place, and then they will adapt to that area, especially the main forest. Even though there are people are feeding them, but these animals not totally depending on people. They are still can search for their own food in the forest. So I think we can still practice. We catch them and transfer to other places. So, and then we have to study how to control the population in specific areas.
That was Professor Dr. Ahmad Ismail, president of the Malaysian Nature Society. On that last point, he brought up culling has been the main method used by Perhelitan, or the Department of Wildlife and National Parks Peninsula Malaysia, to control the macaque population. And the department gets an average of 3,800 complaints from the public every year.
Wow.
So in response to that, you know, the Guardian article does report that up to 70,000 of the animals are culled annually. So between 2013 and 2016, those were the numbers that were being culled. But what Prof. Ahmad suggested, you know, the method of trapping and releasing seems to be a more humane and sustainable method. Earlier, Benjamin also shared with me some ideas about how we can coexist with macaques.
One of the things is that we must move beyond looking at the city as a clear-cut space between built area for humans and natural area, you know, very obvious green and non-green spaces, because the lines are not so clear. Wherever there is a resource, animals will move there. We may not think of ourselves as resource creators, but we are. Our roofs, our drains, you know, our homes, and even our food waste. And we must understand that macaques in particular are very cosmopolitan. Even if we have enough forests, it's not as simple as thinking they will stay in there. We also have to make the developed space less attractive to them. So, you know, there are three aspects to this. I think one of them is that waste management is essential. Heavy-lidded bins do indeed deter macaques, and this is one way to prevent them from taking advantage of the food waste in the city. But secondly, education is also very important. I think it's part of civic consciousness to learn to read macaque behaviour, you know, to minimize conflict and negative interaction, and also simple things like not to feed or tempt or taunt macaques. And finally, thirdly, I think there is a chance for us to try to actually encourage positive interaction. Perhaps we can rediscover the macaque not so much as a pest, but as a neighbor. For instance, what if we actually provide more of the food it actually eats? One way is to think about how we can actually create spaces where we plant fruiting trees deliberately for our furry long-tailed neighbors, you know, and when they are happy, then they're less likely to bother us.
So that was Benjamin Ong from Urban Biodiversity Initiative. You know, he offers very good, very innovative ideas, but I don't know how people will react to that. We have a WhatsApp message here from somebody who's not happy with our furry long-tailed neighbours. Dominic Mothu from Port Dickson has provided an address in Port Dickson where monkeys are terrorizing the area. He says they're pushing down clotheslines, chewing in clothes that are being hung out to dry, climbing through bathroom windows, throwing out the toiletries. Mm. So he implores the authorities concerned to take remedial action immediately.
Mm. So the Guardian article that you referred to actually ends, I think, on that note as well, with quite a flourish, I must say. I quote, "Many people in Malaysia are hoping for a future in which slightly fewer monkeys chase lecturers into toilet blocks, harass joggers, and steal confidential military documents from postmen."
Okay.
I mean, it's honestly, to me, this is a little dramatic.
I also feel these are isolated incidents. If you read the article, yes, the writer does link to some news reports about these things happening. But we should be careful not to generalize and paint the macaques as becoming, you know, out of control, wild pests, which really, even if they are, we only have ourselves to blame.
No, that's exactly it, isn't it? I feel like so much of this conversation totally ignores the fact that we have actually created the situation, like collectively, with bad or, you know, not the best urban planning. And then the fact that we do not at all have guidelines as to how people should be interacting. Mm-hmm. One of the examples that the writer brings up, which is Batu Caves. I mean, yes, the macaques there can be quite, you know, intimidating for people who are just there to pray or whatever. But then there are also hundreds of tourists who are there every day, feeding them, Instagramming them, posing with them, giving them water. Who's just train these monkeys to learn to grab mineral water bottles or to grab Pepsi cans, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we need to take some responsibility that we've created this scenario.
And I think it's also the lack of knowledge of monkey behavior, right? So, for example, when we see stray cats and stray dogs, we kind of know what to do around them, right? We don't, for example, with stray dogs or a pack of stray dogs, we don't heckle them, we don't tease them, right? And yet we see people doing that with these monkeys because, they're a lot smaller. They're the size of a large cat, I would say. But they are strong. They're very strong. Mm-hmm. They're stronger than us. Mm. And especially when they're in a pack, because they usually are, they're very social animals, you don't stand a chance. And you will run away with, you know, leaving your things behind for them.
Mm. And really, if animals turn aggressive, well, that's normal. They are animals. We shouldn't expect or put human values onto them. They are only looking to survive.
That's a good point. I think especially with animals like monkeys and macaques, we tend to, I always mispronounce this, humanize them.
Yes.
We tend to think that they, because they're cute and they look so human.
And they're
human,
supposedly the closest,
to our species. Treat them like, you know, if it's a baby monkey with its mother, we imagine that it would react the same way that a human would. But they don't. Yeah. They will turn aggressive.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, if you've had any experience like Mr. Dominic Muthu, by the way, thanks Dominic for sharing your experience. And if any of you are having any troubles or have any experience with primates in urban settings, do share your story with us. Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
If you need a bathroom break, I suggest you take it now. And when we come back, we'll talk about that long queue for the women's bathrooms. That's after Arctic Monkeys with Riot Van, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.